March has arrived and we're only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. Make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner BetOnline to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hello Bulls fans and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. We are brought to you today by BetOnline and Untuckit. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show and thank you to you for joining us on this episode of Bulls HQ. Surprisingly, despite our Chicago Bulls continuing to rack up the L's, we have a lot to discuss today as it's been quite a busy week for our Chicago Bulls with lots of little grabs over the entire week. And here with me today to go over all of this Bulls news is the most gullible man I know, the man who continuously loses his season-long bets to me. He is the one, the only C-Red Fred. Fred, how are you, sir?
I've been better, brother. I gotta tell you, this was a really rough week for me. You know, looking back on this season, I'm sure everyone who's listening this, and if you haven't, I'll repeat it, has heard my mantra that I started in the off season in the summer, 7-pick in 17, 7-pick in 18, 7-pick in 19, 7th seed in 20, and 7th title in 21. Well, unfortunately, on the day I lost my bet to you and Matt Peck that the Bulls would finish 500 or better, ironically, the Bulls are 7.5 games out of the 7th seed. 7 games out of the playoffs. Who could have saw that coming?
Who could have possibly seen that coming? Just to add further insult into this, Fred, I mean, the Bulls happened to lose today to the 7th seed Brooklyn Nets. So, I mean, it just, that number 7, it just keeps coming back and it keeps haunting you somehow, some way.
Keeps on hitting me right in the groin with a sledgehammer. It's been a rough, rough weekend.
But tough, you know, number what? 7.
I'm not going to get that upset about it. I mean, I know this season's been a disaster. But over the past 10 days, the emergence of Coby White has really brought me a lot of solace, and I do see a light at the end of the tunnel, or a tunnel at the end of the light. What say you?
Well, I mean, it's been an interesting week because, like I mentioned from the top, there's been some stories that have come out that are sort of related to our Bulls, some more than others, but bad old week in the sense of the win-loss column. I mean, they had a good win against the Dallas Mavs, winning by 2 points, luckily winning that one. But then I guess they had the loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves, a bad loss in that case, against the Pacers. The Bulls didn't necessarily show up in that one. And then came close against the Brooklyn Nets today, but probably should have won that game. And they should have. I mean, they forced 28 turnovers. They had 28 more shots, but still couldn't win that game. So in that sense, the Bulls were 1-3 in this week. But to your point, Coby White continues to be really good. The Bulls also got some players back from injuries, which was nice to see. Wendell returned last week, but we got to see Otto Porter back on the floor for his first game against the Mavs. Lowry came back against the Wolves. So those guys have been back for 2, 3, 4 games now. So Coby's playing well. Zach LaVine, unfortunately, has been out the last week or so. He'll be back next week, though. It's not too serious, but slowly but surely, the Bulls are getting their players back, which makes things a lot more interesting. But to your point, Coby White has been really damn good probably the last 2 weeks, really.
Yeah, he's been very impressive. And I've been, you know, I think you and I both saw kind of eye to eye on him for the first half of the season. And I think there were a lot of people surprised he didn't make the All-Star team, the future All-Stars game, and I wasn't, and I don't think you were either. I thought he was pretty poor for a lot of the season. He had some really nice moments where he had a few games, and I often said that I thought he was either alternatively brilliant or terrible, and it was really hard to, it was really hard to watch sometimes. I thought he was playing pretty poorly for much of December. Is that your dog in the background? What's going on over there? Have you taken him out yet for a walk?
That is my dog in the background. He's disappointed in the Bulls record. Actually, no, he was barking just to let you know that he was just, you know, giving you shit basically for losing the bet. That's what he was doing.
He was barking to let you know the king of Doggable Nation was in the house. I gotcha. But, you know, back to, you know, I think you and I were simpatico in that, you know, I thought overall this season was a disappointment. I thought he was shooting extremely poor. There were a lot of bad games. And then all of a sudden, he, you know, with those 30 in a row, he just looks like a completely different player after the All-Star break. It's like a new kid, and it's great to see. And when you see a kid who has that kind of work ethic, and from everybody I've talked to who are associated with the Bulls, he's constantly working. He's there longer than anyone else. He's there earlier than anyone else. That's a great sign for a kid who's only 20 years old, and to see him kind of make this jump. I mean, I've been just absolutely on cloud nine about it. To make it even more exciting, there's starting to be a national buzz about him. Like, I listened to a lot of the Ringer basketball podcasts. I was listening to another one today where they were doing a redraft, and the guy said, you know, basically he'd take Kobe Whitehead, a Barrett. You know, what say you about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was never an RJ Barrett fan at all, but I mean, just to give some perspective on what Kobe's been doing over his last 10 games, 24 points per game, shooting 46% from the field, over 40% from the three-point line, over 90% from the free throw line as well, 4.5 assists to 2.1 turnover, so you'll take that any day of the week. But yeah, Kobe, the last 10 games, 2 weeks, whatever time period you want to call it, he has been shooting the lights out of the ball, so that is one thing, but he's definitely shown signs of improvement as well. So even when the shooting comes back to some normal level, you would still expect him to continue to play much better than what we saw through the first 50-odd games of the season. But yeah, it's an interesting one because I was never an RJ Barrett fan. I'm still not super high on RJ Barrett. Would I prefer Kobe over RJ? Probably. I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, RJ has that bigger body, so there's that one thing where if he does put it together, the fact that he is a big wing, that maybe points to his favor. But I mean, Kobe is, right now at least, exceeding my expectations. Probably the previous 2 to 3 months he was pretty poor, and I'm not comparing him to Antonio Blakeney at all, but if you just look at their rookie numbers at from a per 100 possessions basis, him and rookie Antonio Blakeney were actually quite similar. So that's how bad Kobe was at one point during this season, as you sort of alluded to before. But over the last few weeks, he's been damn good. So if he can keep this up throughout the remainder of this season, it will change my perception of who potentially Kobe White can be on this Bulls team. But to your point, he is getting that national buzz now.
And he's clearly been, if you redraft the top 10, I don't think you can make an argument that he'd be number 3 right now. RJ Barrett is, you know, he hasn't shot the ball well. I still see a lot of things out. I've seen a lot this year that I do like. But I think Kobe White has passed him up. And, you know, DeAndre Hunter, you know, obviously I love the kid. He's had some ups and downs, but you can't say he's played better than Kobe. Darius Garland, no way. Jared Culver, no way. You know, Jackson Hayes, give me a break, you know. Cam Reddish, are you kidding me? So, I mean, if you redo the draft, Kobe White's a top 3 pick. And that's what, in retrospect, if you look at the month of January, Mark, in that month, and I think there was 16 games in that month, he shot 39% from the field, 33.8% from 3. He was, and 64% from the line. He was shooting terrible. As soon as the, you know, clock turned to February, he's been a different player. And I think now he's on his way becoming first All-NBA rookie class.
Yeah, he could potentially make that first team. And look, I was cautious to see where this was all going because we all know what happened in February 2019 last year, where Lauri Markkanen was doing his thing, averaging 26 points, 12 rebounds, but then that quickly fell off. But we Bulls fans, we cling to that February run, not only just for Lauri, but just the team in general. So I'm hesitant to get over the top or go over the top with this whole thing, but we're now into March now, and even if there's games where Kobe White isn't necessarily shooting the ball well, like he did against the Nets, he didn't have his best game against the Nets from a shooting standpoint, 21 points on 21 field goal attempts, but he had the 8 assists, 0 turnovers against the Nets, 6 rebounds, so he's slowly starting to find other ways to alter the game beyond his shooting and scoring, which most certainly wasn't the case during the first few months of the season. So that's probably been more the encouraging thing than his scoring at the moment, because I mean, he's going through a bit of a hot streak where some of these games are just coming out and banging in a million threes and just hitting these tough shots. That will sort of waver at some point, but if he can show more of his passing chops, which he has been of late, he's not necessarily creating plays outside of the pick and roll, which is fine. I mean, he's a 19-year-old kid, but he's still finding his teammates, still setting up scores and doing more of that, which to me is pleasing. So I want to see more of that from Coby White. And to me, his assist game, his rebounding game was more impressive than what his scoring game has been over the last week to me.
No doubt. I mean, there's improvements in every facet of his game. Have you finally come around on the fact that this kid should be starting?
I think he should be starting when Zach LaVine is definitely not playing. I most certainly agree with that. I think it's stupid that Coby White is coming off the bench when Zach LaVine is not playing, because my whole reasoning for having Coby on the bench was there was too much crossover between who LaVine was as a player and who Coby White is as a player. But when you remove one of them, and in this case, Zach LaVine, given he's been out with that quad injury for the last couple games, there is no real reason to be benching Coby at this point. I understand it more, and I still am fine with him coming off the bench when Zach is back on the team. But right now, with Zach out injured, I mean, it's stupid.
Well, that's exactly the wrong take. You need to have Coby White playing with Zach LaVine as much as possible to figure out if these guys can play together. In fact,
we're not redoing this argument, are we?
No, but I just got to say this. We need to find out if this core four can play together. They have to play. They have hardly played together. I want Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr., and Coby White on the floor together as much as possible for the rest of the season. With every time that they're not on the floor together, we lose the we question, can these guys grow into a contender? What can they be? It makes absolutely no sense for me why you would not want to play those two together. Please clarify your position for those that continue to wonder what's wrong with you.
Well, like I said last week when we were arguing this point, I am fine with the way it's structured, because at the moment, the way the rotations are structured, Coby White is still playing a lot of minutes with these players, and more so in closing halves than starting halves. So to me, it's not a big deal. He's still getting his minutes. He's still getting his opportunity. He's still getting plenty of time with the core four, so to speak. So to me, it's a non-issue. So that was my point last week. It remains my point this week. In games where Zach LaVine is not playing, then Coby White should definitely be starting. I'd certainly agree with you at that point, but I'm not necessarily moving on my previous point.
Okay. I guess we'll just have to move on here, because I can tell there's people listening to this that are pulling out their hair wondering why you still are hanging on this, but that's fine. Not only that, I want Otto Porter Jr. starting. It makes absolutely no sense to me why he's coming off the bench, why he continues to keep him coming off the bench. Otto Porter Jr. aids in the development of the core four. He makes those players better. He builds their confidence. He does the things that help for them to succeed. When they succeed, they build confidence and they become better. Why is he not starting? Suddenly he's coming off the bench. Does this make any sense to you, Mark?
It does. And more importantly, it makes sense to Otto Porter, who after the Brooklyn game said he's happy with the role at the moment and he slowly wants to build up to becoming into that starting role. So to me, it makes sense. We can talk about the returning players, specifically Otto and Lowry now, because we've given enough praise to Coby at this point. But Otto, what have you made of his return? He had his first game back. He came back, scored 18 points against the Mavs, instantly provided some offense off the bench. His next couple games weren't so great, but he was pretty good coming off the bench, 23 points against the Nets, if I am not mistaken. I've liked the way he's come off the bench. Thad has come off the bench. Coby have come off the bench. Those guys as a unit are really providing a lot of scoring for the Bulls as a second unit, and it's just nicely balancing everything out. So I think at some point, Otto will be back into the starting lineup. He is on a minutes restriction, and he himself is fine with coming off the bench at the moment and has agreed to it as part of the plan. So I'm not mad about it.
Well, I've been frustrated with Otto. Again, it's the same thing we saw the first couple games, the previous, the 9 games that he started the season. He had some incredible, great shooting nights. He was 7 for 11 in his first game in a victory over Dallas. And then the next night when we played Minnesota, he goes 1 of 8. Just a horrible night, 0-for-3 from three. And then the next game after that against Indiana, I did not think he played good that game. He was 4-for-9 from the field, 0-for-1 from three. Was again on the plus-minus side. He was negative. I know he played well today against New Jersey, but that's far too much of what I saw earlier in the season, where he'd play one fantastic game, a game against the Detroit Pistons comes to mind, and then he'd have just a horrific game the next one. So a lot of inconsistency from Otto. Not what I expected. I think he's a pro. I really like his game. I need to see more consistency from him. I guess it's to be expected to some extent when you come back from such a long layoff. But doesn't make sense to me. And I can guarantee you, if you sit him down over dinner, Otto Porter Jr. is going to be like, I want to be starting as soon as possible. I don't understand this line of thinking. I don't see why it's good, why you should be starting. Even Denzel Valentine, who I like, I think the Bulls are better off with Denzel coming off the bench. It's just bizarro world to me, but that's what you expect when Jim Boylan's the head coach.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting point. I'm not going to say you're wrong, because I certainly understand why you would say that. And Otto has definitely come back, and he's definitely come back shooting. I mean, he's getting up those shots. He's making up for lost time. And dare I say it, is he trying to maybe play himself into a new deal? Possibly. Who knows? I guess we'll find that out in a few months' time, whether he's trying to do this just to jack up some of his, well, you know, his future price potentially in terms of earning a new contract. But he has not been shy in terms of shooting the shot. But I'm not surprised that he looks inconsistent. Look, to your point, he's missed a lot of time, but he probably doesn't look in game shape either. I'm not going to call him overweight or fat or anything like that, because he certainly isn't. But he's not in his best Otto Porter shape if you compare what he looks like now versus what he looked like even at the start of season or even last season. He's not looking at his normal toned self. He's a little doughy at this point. So not in prime fitness at the moment. Not to be expected given the injury that he did sustain. But someone who did come back straight into the starting lineup is Lauri Markkanen. He returned against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He looked okay in that game. 13 points in 21 minutes. 6 of 10 shooting. Very good game against the Wolves, but then has struggled since. Only 3 points against the Indiana Pacers, 1 of 10 shooting in that game, and then against the Nets today. Picked up the offense a little bit today, 16 points on eight field goal attempts, 4 or 5 from the 3-point line, but continues to get lost in the offense, continues just to take these jump shots. And he threw some shade earlier at, well, this is the way I've interpreted it at least. He threw some shade at Jim Boylan earlier in the week in terms of saying over the final 10, 20 games, he just wants to be aggressive and wants to prove that he can do multiple things and isn't just a spot-up shooter. So that's Lowry's words, not mine. What do you make of his comments in terms of how he's being used? Do you think it's justifiable, all that sort of stuff? And what have you made of Lowry's return over his first 3 games back?
Well, I'm beyond frustrated with Lauri Markkanen. I understand his frustration. I don't think he's been put in a position to succeed this year. But for him to say that he wants to show us that he can be beyond a spot-up shooter, I'd be happy just to see him become a catch-and-shoot player. He's been horrific at it. That Indiana game was a complete disgrace, 1 of 10, 0 for 5 from 3. I mean, to me, it begins and ends with his 3-point shooting. Like today against New Jersey, 4 or 5 from 3. Everything good that Lauri Markkanen does starts with the ability to hit the 3. And when he's not hitting the 3, he is not a good player. It's just a fact. I know the first game of the year, he had a pretty good game without hitting the 3, but overall, over the course of a season, all the value that Lauri Markkanen brings is bringing the 4, the opposition's 4, away from the rim, and then he can either attack or help other players succeed by pulling that 4 out. If he's not hitting that 4, he's not good enough of a interior player, or a, not even close as a post player, to be a dominant player in his NBA. To me, Lauri Markkanen needs to spend the summer with a shooting coach of elite repute. Either it needs to be, I don't know if Dirk Nowitzki's shooting coach, you can pull him out of the mothballs or whatever. Find somebody to spend time with him and get him up to that 38, 39, 40% level from 3, because what I've seen this year is not cutting it. I understand Boylan's an incompetent doofus, but some of this is on Lauri Markkanen, and his inability to consistently hit 3s when he's wide open, I find extremely frustrating. And he's not good enough of a defensive player to be on the plus side when he's shooting poorly.
Yeah, look, I 100% agree with you. And to me, that quote that I read off before from Lauri Markkanen, it really bothered me, because, I mean, prove that you can at least be a spot-up shooter before you can prove that you're anything more. I mean, he hasn't even proven that at this point. We're in year 3 at this point. We all expected Lauri to be better than an average jump shooter, which he hasn't been. I mean, 36% through his first 2 seasons with the Bulls. Hasn't been much better this season. I wanted to see better shooting from Lauri, at least 38, 39, 40% this season, which seemed attainable given the expectations we had as a shooter coming into the draft. I mean, we expected Lauri, if nothing else, to be an ace shooter, to be a Davis Bertans type player, but he's not even that. So, Lauri, I don't want to hear about you saying you need different looking shots. You're not necessarily a spot-up shooter. You're more than a spot-up shooter. Show me that you can be that at least. before we even think about thinking about, you know, getting you on the move, getting you in the post, getting you in the mid-range, all that sort of stuff. If you want to be that player, the system isn't necessarily stopping you from being that player. And I say that because against the Nets, I understand that the Bulls want Lauri Markkanen at the three-point line because, to your point, Fred, he needs to develop that shot, and that will be his biggest weapon in the NBA, and it's just so important for him, but also the rest of the team. But he's also not doing anything to justify his position anywhere else on the court. He doesn't move on the court. Now, we can say or blame that all on Boylan, and I know a lot of fans will do that because Boylan is who Boylan is, and no one really likes Jim Boylan, and I most certainly agree with that, but to your point, Lauri needs to own some of this. He's been too passive in himself. And before the season even started, there was a lot of talk about Lauri being, or he should be, the number one option on this offense, and that Zach LaVine should give over that number one mantle to Lauri Markkanen, and that would be a better hierarchy for our Chicago Bulls. But like I had been saying all offseason, it's up to Lauri to take that mantle from Zach LaVine. And until he does, no one should be handing anything to Lauri Markkanen. And he continues to be passive, and that really annoys me. And another thing that annoys me is the fact that he has enough goodwill earned with the fan base for whatever reason that too many people let him get away with it and blame it all on Boylan, when I think a lot of it is on Lauri Markkanen, if not most of it.
I agree 100%. Let's look at it. Just look at the numbers. He's ninth on the team in three-point shooting. He's shooting 33.7% with over 300 attempts. Like, I know some people will counter, well, your hero Denzel Valentine's only a little bit above him at 33.9. Yeah, Denzel's got 127 attempts. If Denzel's at 300 attempts and still shooting the piss-ass percentage of 33.7, I will concur. But that's inexcusable. For 300 attempts is more than enough to get that percentage over 35%. Again, that's terrible. That's terrible. That's not good. What are the good percentages in the NBA? 38% or higher is very good. 36% is good. 34% is average at best. 32 is fair, and 30 sucks. Lauri's flirting with barely average to below average. So, come on, we expect better from him, and I think we're both simpatico on this issue.
Yeah, 100%. Look, even in the games where he hasn't got his offense going, I just want to see him do something else. And against the Nets, in 26 minutes, he only had 2 rebounds. I don't know how that is possible for a 7-footer. I understand Jim Boylan's scheme has his players rotating all over the court, and Lowry's playing more on the perimeter now than he has been in the previous seasons. But to have only 2 rebounds against the Nets, I know Wendell Carter only had 3 himself today, but Wendell has been a double-double machine for the Bulls this year, so I'm willing to give him the pass, whereas Lowry's pretty much been averaging 5 or 6 rebounds a game this season. So if your offense isn't going, show me what else you can do. And I know a lot of people like to complain about Lauri not necessarily getting enough shots, and the fact that Thad Young, Otto Porter, Kobe White, even Satoransky, these guys have more field goal attempts than Lauri on occasions. But you know what? Those players are trying to actively move and do something to actually get up some of these shots. Thad Young gets 14 shots because he hits the offensive glass. He does a lot of things where he's trying to get some additional attempts. He's getting some of his offense from the three-point line. He's getting some of his offense from the post. He's moving around and doing things. There's nothing stopping Lauri Markkanen from being more active on the offensive end than Lauri Markkanen. And I'm sick of hearing otherwise.
Somebody needs to speak to him immediately this summer and tell him, Lauri, you got to be more selfish. You got to be more about me. I need my shots. Be more forceful with the other players. It's against his nature, but for the sake of his career, he needs to do this, and he does need to work on his shot. I think we're both in agreement on this, and you're right, though. There is so many excuses for Lauri Markkanen, and you and I would not at all declare Lauri bashers. I've been a huge fan. I'm the guy who was saying last summer I thought he had top 10 talent eventually, but no, I'm way off that ship. That ship sailed. In fact, I don't see how you could say he's got the best future out of the core four now. To me, he's the distant fourth out of the other four. Don't you concur?
Yeah, I mean, that is most certainly an interesting point. I want to expand on that, but before we do, let's take a break to tell the listeners about this week's sponsor. Ever wonder why traditional button-ups look so long and baggy? That's because they're never meant to be worn that way. Untucked shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, their shirts are the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 fit combinations, untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Don't just take my word for it. Try Untuckit for yourself. Visit untuckit.com and use promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns to all orders in the US. That's untuckit.com and promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. All right, back to the show now. And Fred, you raised an interesting point about where, or based on this season at least, where our projections of the core four, if we want to refer to them that, where we potentially see these guys going in the future. And we were talking about Larry Markkanen and the fact that maybe his career arc has sort of flattened off here, or even taken a downturn or a down curve, however you want to say it. But it's an interesting point, and I think it's fair to wonder where the hell Larry Markkanen's career goes from this point. I mean, this is year three from him. We're going into year four effectively soon for the Bulls. I mean, this season, they're obviously not making the playoffs. So can he get some momentum running into year four where maybe some of our perceptions start to change? But we've seen Coby White take a leap over the last few weeks. Obviously, Zach LaVine still operating in that same system that many are saying that, you know, makes it tough for Larry Markkanen. And he's had a career year. I think Wendell Carter, whilst he hasn't met my expectations for this season, I was expecting a little more. I think he has shown some growth. So, yeah, it's interesting where we put these four guys going forward, you know, in what order next year.
Well, I think it's pretty close with Wendell and Larry. I've been pretty disappointed with Wendell since he's come back from the injury. I think he's played pretty awful on the offensive end. But mm-hmm. I do feel he's more a victim of how he's being used. Like, yes. they continue to try to put him in a position to be a back-to-the-basket, 1989 center, when that's not his game. I watched hour upon hour of videotape of him in college. He's a great passer. They don't utilize him that way. They basically relegated him to setting picks and playing defense, and, you know, occasionally they'll throw the ball to him in the post, which isn't his game. And, you know, he hasn't shot the ball well. I agree. I think they're trying to get him more shots, but he's not utilized. If it's pretty egregious for Larry to be complaining about, I don't want to be relegated to shot. Well, you should have relegated to something other than a pick center like Wendell. So if out of the two, Wendell Carter has far a bigger argument than Larry Markkanen. That said, at least Wendell Carter is a lead in something. Like, to me, he's an elite interior defender. I think he's going to be one of the better rim defenders in the league for years to come. You see something that he does exceptionally well, and the team is clearly better when he's on the court defensively. What does Larry Markkanen do to help us make us significantly better this year? You know, not in the past, but this year. What has he done where I felt like, wow, man, there's something special here? I can't tell you how many games I've watched where Wendell Carter's had a shot block or done something on the defensive end that I'm just like, man, this kid is going to be something when he gets his act together. They just got to determine, though, what is he going to be? When I saw him in camp, he was clearly 270. He looked massive, Mark. I mean, it was clear he was a massive, you know, like a Hulk figure, not fat, but way too muscle bound. I didn't think he needed to be that muscle bound in the NBA today. I think it's hurt his agility, his speed, and I think it's hurt him a little bit. Obviously, it hurt him because he spent 6 weeks out with an ankle injury that was partly caused by the fact that he weighs 270. I think he needs to lose weight, become a little quicker, and try to develop a little bit more perimeter skills, would say you.
Of all the things you've ever said to me, this is the most I've ever agreed with you on any topic ever. I mean, I couldn't agree more, mate. I seriously could not agree more, because on a number of things you said, Wendell, more so than Larry, is suffering more in this system that Jim Boylan is running than Larry Markkanen. To your point, the very first shot attempt he got when he returned from 6 weeks, 7 weeks away from basketball was a post-up attempt where he started running to the middle of the lane and took a lefty running hook shot, basically. I mean, that is not the kind of offense that we want to be developing in Wendell Carter. One, because he's not a post player. He's always been a face-up player. So get him some mid-range shots, you know, around the elbow at least, and then have him slowly extend to the three-point line. His three-point shot has been completely absent under Jim Boylan, and that has gone away. At least under Fred Hoiberg in his first 25 games, he was taking 1 3 a game. That has completely disappeared under Boylan. So I concur 100% that that Wendell Carter, more so than Lauri Markkanen, is suffering under Jim Boylan through from an offensive standpoint. And because of that, I'm not surprised that Wendell Carter came out last week in a report from Joe Kelly saying that he wants to play more power forward. Now, I completely disagree with Wendell Carter. His best role in the NBA is at center. But I'm not surprised that he would be saying, I want to be more of a power forward, because the power forwards on this roster, they are camping out on the three-point line. They're getting to play that face-up game. They're also not coming up and blitzing pick and rolls to the same level that Wendell Carter is. They get to sort of camp out into the corner a little bit more based on the Bulls' defensive scheme at the moment. So Wendell's probably had enough of being a post player. He's probably had enough of just being a rim roller. He's most certainly had enough of being a blitz guy on defense, where he's sort of coming out to the three-point line and then is expected to roll back towards the rim and protect the rim. He's probably had enough of all of that to the point where he wants to play power forward now, and he's said he's going to speak with management and coaching about that whole situation, which in itself may be a big story brewing behind the scenes. But oh yeah, like I said before, Fred, I couldn't agree more with anything you've ever said before. But what do you make about Wendell wanting to play power forward? Did that comment take you by surprise?
It didn't, because I know he wants to do more. Like, and it kept on, like, when he said that comment, it echoed in my head, like, what I saw of him at Duke. He was basically doing, like, on the offensive end, more of a role where he was doing a lot more facilitating and kind of like a point forward was what I would declare him. Whereas, you know, that team was kind of unique. They had a lot of talent on that team at Duke. And he had one thing that just stuck with me was they kept on saying what a good passer he was. And I saw that on tape. Like, he'd constantly have the ball at the high post and make these really nice touch passes, really good passes, putting his teammates in position to score. He's got 1.2 assists. Lauri Markkanen has 1.5. I've never seen Lauri Markkanen have good – he's not a good passer. But Wendell is 10 times the passer. The reason he's averaging 1.2 assists is because all he does is set picks. And when Zach LaVine goes around his pick, there's a good chance Wendell Carter Jr. is not going to see the ball again. And he's just not getting the ball in position to succeed with his passing. So I understand why, you know, like, power forwards in this league are far more active offensively, where I think centers are – name the top five centers in the NBA. You know, you'd have to sit back and think about it for a second. Like, it's not a position of strength in the NBA anymore. In fact, the Houston Rockets are basically, you know, devalued it to the point they're not even playing a center anymore. So it's – I do understand his point. I do agree with you that I think he should focus on becoming the best center in the league, but I think he was far too heavy this year. I do think he needs to get back to that 249, 250 weight that he was in college, and I think that's more than enough in today's NBA.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Let's keep this going, because we've still got a few more topics to go, and we've probably only got 10 more minutes left on the podcast, and I want to touch on these ones because, look, we're alluding to some Jim Boylan stuff here, and of course it wouldn't be a week within Bulls Nation without some sort of ridiculous topics surrounding Jim Boylan at some point. So I don't know where to begin, but let's start here, Fred, with Casey Johnson sort of just slyly reporting in one of his mailbags. Actually, it wasn't necessarily a separate news piece, but maybe it should have been its own standalone report. But he let us all know that Jim Boylan and Doug Collins have reportedly had a falling out, to which Jim Boylan publicly denied prior to the Pacers game that is true. But Casey reported that. Joe Kelly followed up and reported something similar. He didn't go as hard as Casey, but he's definitely said the relationship has changed at this point. So Jim Boylan falling out potentially with Doug Collins makes it very interesting for next season, given that Doug Collins, even though he's an advisor, has been influential. He's sort of been one of the leaders in having Gar Forman demoted. He was sort of one of the leaders in getting Fred Hoiberg fired. So the fact that Jim Boylan potentially is falling out with Doug Collins may not be good news for Jim Boylan, but we'll wait and see. But what do you make of that? And what do you also make of John Paxson coming out yesterday and basically reiterating that Jim Boylan is doing a good job in continuing to develop our guys and develop our culture, even citing the development of Kobe White as a recent example of Jim Boylan and his staff's development? What do you make of all this Jim Boylan stuff?
Well, you know, the Pax comments are utterly ridiculous. And let's take a step back to Doug Collins. I do see Doug Collins disagreeing quite a bit with Jim Boylan. I'm not surprised by that report. I believe it. And if you look at everything you just mentioned there, Doug Collins is not a fan of Gar Forman. What else did you say there? Doug Collins was not happy with the hiring of Fred Hoiberg. Hello, every one of his points are right. Like, Doug Collins on a bad day is 1,000 times the coach or basketball mind that Jim Boylan will ever be. Doug Collins would, if they're arguing this season, I can guarantee you that 99 out of the 100 arguments they're having, there's Doug Collins on one side with a big bell being rung. He's correct. And then on the other side, you have Jim Boylan with, poop falling on his head because he's wrong. I'm in bizarro world that this is even an argument. People are jumping on Doug Collins. Doug Collins, just because some of you guys are too young to remember him, doesn't mean he's not an excellent basketball mind. That's exactly what he is. He knows he's forgot more basketball on a Tuesday than most of us will ever remember. He was an excellent coach. Everywhere he's gone, he made his team significantly better. He understands basketball. And I'm not surprised that they're arguing because Doug Collins is smart enough to realize what a complete doofus his head coach is. I went back and watched recently the 2009 playoffs with Vinny Del Negro and Chicago Bulls versus Boston Celtics. We all remember that classic 7-game series. The Bulls won the first game. In the second game, the Bulls lost despite 42 points from Ben Gordon. The reason they lost that game is because Vinny Del Negro consistently proved throughout the season he was just like Jim, incapable of managing his timeouts. So the Bulls actually finished the game with Ben Gordon on the bench, and they were unable to go full court because Vinny had used all his stupid timeouts. That moron was a horrific head coach, and Jim falls right in his footsteps. But guess who was announced in that game? Yes, one Doug Collins. And Doug Collins criticized Vinny for his use of timeouts at the end of that game, and he stated many times you always need to have a timeout for the last 10 seconds. And so I'm sure that was probably one of the many things they've argued on. But in this bizarro world of Bulls fans, let's all please just calm down and realize Doug Collins is probably in the right here. What say you?
I agree with you. I think Doug Collins is probably right in identifying that Jim Boylan is most definitely a dumbass. So that I agree with you. But the fact that Doug Collins is an advisor, someone that's meant to be in the background and is having this level of influence, makes me uneasy because a lot of people are saying, including you, Fred, that if John Paxson were to go in the background and have a similar role as Doug Collins, someone who's just meant to be in the background and doesn't necessarily have final say. Well, we just listed off the fact that Collins has had his hand in the Gar stuff, on the Hoiberg stuff. He's obviously calling out Boylan now, maybe internally. If a similar role is to be for Paxson, that is concerning to me.
So I understand your viewpoint. Like, hey, if Pax gets promoted a la Kenny, Kenny Williams did for the White Sox, and we bring in a new decision maker, and John's got his fingerprints all over the new decisions and is constantly badgering him and criticizing the new decision maker, that's not good. I just don't see John being like that. I think if Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Reinsdorf say, listen, he's going to be decision maker, we want your input, but if the final decision rests with him, I don't see him being like that, just like, constantly involved in causing problems and causing issues. Overall, John Paxson, I think, has made the vast majority of decisions he's made have been good ones. This one, I've lost, it's fireable offense, as I've said before. Putting your faith consistently, coming out publicly in favor of Jim Boylan is bizarre to me. It's weird. I don't understand it, but I think a lot of the hard-ass tendencies, unfortunately, that's something that, for whatever reason, John has admired. I find them nauseating and stupid.
Yes, I 100% agree. And for whatever reason, against the Timberwolves, Jim Boylan decided to play his hard-ass card, where he sort of went out the team, essentially called the team soft. He didn't say the word soft, but he said they went tough enough, which is essentially saying the same thing. And
wasn't
on the
that
back
ridiculous?
Of that, it was completely ridiculous, considering he was mentioning the Bulls were beat on the offensive glass and the Wolves only had 10 offensive rebounds, which is anywhere near or close to one of the worst performances the Bulls have had in terms of giving up offensive rebounds or not being tough or whatever adjective he wants to put on the whole thing. So that was ridiculous, but John Paxson continues to endorse and support Jim Boylan, which is just completely odd. So I ask you, Fred, will you say the words now? Fire Gar Pax. Will you say it? You said fire a little bit of offense, but will you say it?
I'll say I think change is needed. And I'll continue to say that. I'm not going to just go along with the crowd, Mark.
But you agree with one of those people. Just say it.
I'm not one of those people. I'm not even sure. Like, see, I don't have an issue with if Michael Reinsdorf and Jerry Reinsdorf want to promote a legend like John Paxson to a position, a glorified. Did you ever see Seinfeld? Are you a Seinfeld fan? Do you remember when the mail guy who was like from Vietnam, the Vietnam War guy, or I don't know. Do you remember when Elaine promoted the mail guy who was kind of strange all the way to president? He didn't really.
I don't remember this episode, but I'll take your word for it.
It's kind of like that to me. Like when all is said and done, does this guy have any decision making? Like I don't feel like I want Pax necessarily be fired. I just want a new decision maker. And I do agree with people when they say there should be new decisions because this is not working. The last 3 years have been a disaster. How about Sato? We didn't talk about him at all. What a signing. Oh, brilliant. He's the best. You know that bum is shooting 11% in the last 7 games? We're 2-14 since Dunn went down. Yeah, he's great.
Don't try and change the topic on me. Can I at least get you to say this? If you won't say fire Garpax, can I at least get you to say reassign Garpax?
I'm absolutely for reassign Garpax.
All right, we're making progress.
Why don't you get the billboard builders with that one, see if they're willing to collect some change.
we'll see what I can do. We'll see if we can get that one up for you at least. But
I'm going to talk the great Kenny Atkinson. Is that the next topic? What's the next topic?
I definitely want to talk about Kenny Atkinson because it relates to the whole Jim Boylan stuff. And then I want to close with the Clippers having some interest in Chris Dunn. So they're the last things I want to talk about. But let's talk about the fact that the Brooklyn Nets, the team the Bulls face today, they mutually parted ways with their head coach, Kenny Atkinson, essentially fired him. They both agreed that he wasn't going to be the coach going forward. He loses his job despite having his team in the playoffs, despite losing Kevin Durant for all of the season, barely having Kyrie Irving. He loses his job whilst Jim Boylan remains employed as an NBA head coach, despite his team being well under 500, 20 games under 500, in fact, declaring playoffs and being nowhere close to it. So, Fred, I know we were going back and forward on this one on Twitter. I think your takes around this whole situation are completely ridiculous, but maybe you can convince me otherwise and explain your point a little bit more on the podcast. So how about it? Tell me why Kenny Atkinson would be a bad hire for the Bulls.
Well, simply put, Kenny Atkinson... All right, let's take a step back. Why do you love Kenny Atkinson? In fact, let me explain why you love him. And why do so many fans love Kenny Atkinson?
Why are you asking me if you're just going to explain?
I'll explain the real reason. Whatever reason you give is wrong. You see, everybody who's listening to this, I want you to remember this for the rest of your lives because this is very important anytime you hear any information from any news source. When you hear Zach Lowe or Kevin O'Connor on their podcast say, quote unquote, I was texting with a GM the other day or, some other front office figure, end quote, that's a GM that he or she has a good relationship with. And these writers are reluctant to criticize those organizations. I saw that with Ryan McDonough, whose job performance by any objective observer should only be described as one of the worst in NBA history. But you saw Kevin O'Connor consistently defend Ryan and his moronic choices. Dragan Bender at 5, Josh Jackson, I think he was at 4, or Alex Len, who had just... These are 3 of the worst top 5 picks in the last decade, yet O'Connor always had an excuse. Why? Why? They were buddies. They were buddies in Boston, and McDonough was consistently feeding him info. The info that made McDonough look in the best possible light. It's always the owner's fault, and O'Connor always was there to help out with his excuse. These are the same writers that love Sean Marks at the New Jersey Nets, and his little pet here, Kenny Atkinson. This is the same situation. So when let's take another step back. When it comes to the Bulls, the only 2 guys I read religiously are Casey Johnson and Darnell Mayberry because I believe they're giving me the news as straight as possible. Of course, they're going to have their own beliefs about the team. I take those. I either say, yes, you're right or you're wrong, but I don't let it influence me. And then if you read Joe Colley, which I don't read anymore because his lips have been, planted firmly on the rear end of Tibbs and now Boylan for the last, 10 years. Why would I want to read that? Because he is a biased hack. So that said, I'm trying to paint a picture here of why everybody loves Kenny Atkinson. Because
so if are you calling back, me a biased hack?
I'm not saying you're a biased hack. I'm saying that you're a victim, Mark. You're a victim of the writers who love Sean Marks. And everybody loves, all the national writers love Sean Marks besides Bill Simmons. Why? Because Sean
gives
them information. Oh, yeah. Well, hold on. He's had one great achievement, and that was signing Irving and Durant. If you look objectively, what has he done? Kenny Atkinson, lifetime record of 118 and 190. That's a 390 winning possession percentage. Please stop suggesting him as a candidate for the Bulls, because we can do better than Kenny Atkinson. I'm telling you, we can do better than Kenny Atkinson. And everybody's talking about the culture. He had 42 wins last year. Fred Hoiberg did that, Mark. Why am I supposed to sit here in awe of the job Kenny Atkinson did? You say he had Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's a top 15 player. He had him for 20 games, a third of the season. Who else? How many, as bad as Jim Boylan is, what top 15 player did? Do you think Jim would have been a little bit better if he had a top 15 player for a third of the season? I'd hope so. Like, what? Give me your argument why Kenny Atkinson is better than, let's say, Mark Jackson.
Well, I mean, just bringing up Mark Jackson's name is infuriating to me. It just takes 10 seconds to learn or Google why Mark Jackson is a terrible head coach. Why is it potentially a questionable person? I don't know him, so I won't go full hard on that, but he is a strange individual who I definitely do not want anywhere near this franchise. But in terms of Kenny Atkinson, just referring to his win-loss record is completely misguided, given the fact that the Brooklyn Nets had virtually zero picks, actual good picks coming into his regime, but yet he was able to turn players who were perceived as cast-offs or low-end first-round picks into actual good, credible NBA players, to the point where they built up a team from nothing with no draft picks into a good playoff contender when they won 42 games last season. Now, everything completely changed this season, given that they brought in Durant, given that they brought Kyrie Irving. And we saw last season with the Celtics that Irving himself, despite how talented he is, isn't an easy individual to integrate into your team, into your offense, into your whole structure.
They were a very good team last year. Irving's been a winner for the last 7 years until he got this year.
They were no worse without Kyrie Irving. That is most certainly the truth. So what Kenny Atkinson has done a fantastic job as he's developed players. Spencer Dinwiddie has turned into a very, very good NBA player. Joe Harris basically was out of the league. The Nets picked him up and he's turned into a three-point sniper. Caris LeVert, a late first-round pick, has become a very, very good NBA player. Jarrett Allen, again, a late first-round pick, is a starting caliber NBA player. The list goes on. They've developed a lot of good players. D'Angelo Russell last season, I mean, he turned him into an all-star after being cast away from the Lakers. So there's a lot of players that have developed into good players under Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks. And the Bulls right now need someone that can come in and develop these players. So who better than someone like Kenny Atkinson, who has a track record? That's why it makes sense. Referring to the win-loss record is misguided and intellectually dishonest, Fred.
See, this is where we disagree vociferously. Zach LaVine's two best years in the NBA by far have been this season and last. How much credit are you going to give to Jim Boylan for his development?
Zero.
How about zero? Yeah. Well, as soon as you get me a quote from Spencer Dinwiddie as he's the, Kenny Atkinson's a big reason is where I am today, I'd be happy to jump on board with you. Instead, all I read how Kyrie Irving checked out on him. And I haven't read one quote from a player, Joe Harris, Chris LeVert, all these guys that he allegedly took out of the out of the earth, like they were dead or buried, that they were G Leaguers, and Kenny developed them like a mold of clay. Oh, what a hero, Kenny! Thanks for developing. Give me a break, Mark. Give me a break. I'm telling you right now, Fred Hoiberg, the best 2 years that Jimmy Butler ever had in terms of development were under Fred Hoiberg. How much development credit does he deserve? Zero. Same with Kenny. As soon as I read something that Kenny was the big developer, I'll agree with you. The fact is his record sucked. He didn't win any playoff games. Why this whole – we're all brainwashed.
The Nets won a playoff game last season.
Well, they won one playoff game. Excuse me. All right. Yeah. Here we go. The Tibbs of Minnesota refrain. I'm just telling you right now. I can think about 50 people that I prefer. And my number one choice right now, and I couldn't believe it that somebody else, I heard this on a podcast, unfortunately, but this guy's been in my mind for years. Jay Wright. That's who I want. Jay Wright. I want to throw him trillions of dollars to coach this team. I think he understands what it takes to be a great coach. I would love that guy to be on the side. I tell you what, that guy speaking post-game would be enjoyable as opposed to this doofus that we have currently now. Do you know who Jay Wright is?
I do know who Jay Wright is. That is an inspired choice. I would like that choice. Obviously, he has his connections to Ryan Arcidiacono, if I'm not mistaken, so he may be getting more of a playing time. So I don't know if that foils your thoughts on that. But
he's not going to play. What kind of joke is this? You think Jay Wright's going to just go to the Bulls and immediately Ryan A's starting? He's going to leave Jim's house and move in with Jay? Come on.
Maybe. That's his real father. That's the real coach's son. But I prefer the name Jay Wright than Mark Jackson. At least he went with that. Just never mention Mark Jackson's name again. He's a complete joke. But fine. If you don't want Kenny Atkinson, you don't want Kenny Atkinson, fine. I don't care. You don't have to necessarily like Kenny Atkinson. I think he's a great coach. He's primed to be someone the Bulls should consider when they should fire Boylan. Who knows if they will? I doubt they will. But it would be, I think, a good hire if the Bulls were to bring in Kenny Atkinson. Who knows if they will. Jay Wright, that would be very nice too, but just never, never, never Mark Jackson. But anyway, Fred.
Well, one more question. Did you see my poll? Which of the following candidates would you prefer?
That's suggestive, but no, I didn't see it.
Not that poll. You could probably see it from Australia. Which of the following candidates would you prefer to be the next head coach of the Chicago Bulls? Is it Tibbs and 40 MPGs for Zach? By the way, go back and delete that. I got kids listening to this program. Tibbs and 40 MPGs for Zach, Becky Hammon, Mark Jackson, or Kenny Atkinson?
I voted Kenny Atkinson in that poll, and then I would vote Becky Hammon. Second, Tibbs. I love Tibbs, but it's not time for Tibbs now. He can go elsewhere, and certainly not Mark Tibbs.
It's Tibbs and 40 MPGs for Zach.
Whatever it is, I didn't vote for Tibbs, and I wouldn't want Tibbs back. So, anyway, right. it's disappointing that we had to disagree like this so vociferously, or whatever word you wanted to use, because we did come together on that Wendell piece. I thought we were making some progress, but it is what it is. But look, Fred, let's quickly close on two things. One, the Clippers showing interest in Chris Dunn in the offseason. Casey Johnson reported that during the week, but also the Clippers signing Joakim Noah to a 10-day contract. He will be on their roster, and hopefully he makes their roster heading into the playoffs, because the Clippers, they are a serious chance at a title despite losing to the Lakers today. And how good would it be to see Joakim Noah win an NBA title with the Clippers, beating the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James in the Western Conference Finals? That would be pure deliciousness for us Bulls fans, but who knows if that'll happen, but it's still nice to see. But quickly, Fred, what do you make about the Clippers potentially showing interest in Chris Dunn? We'll close on this one.
I think any smart team who's serious about winning a title would understand the value of Chris Dunn, especially if you're in the West and you have, if you're the Clippers and you're playing, look at the teams you got to go through, all with elite perimeter players. Chris Dunn is as good as it gets when it comes to stopping elite perimeter players. I think he'd be a great addition if you're playing Houston. You could throw him against Westbrook. You can throw him against Harden. Just think, go down the list of teams in the West. Chris Dunn would be an excellent addition, and I can completely understand why a smart organization like the Clippers would want the services of Chris Dunn. It's a shame that he was hurt, because I do feel that a team like the Clippers would have given up significant assets. Maybe not significant, but definitely assets worth of interest to the Bulls to get his services.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's ultimately going to come down to price with Chris Dunn. If you can retain him on a decent number, then fine. But if he's going to be overpaid by a contender in the 8 to 9 million range, somewhere like that, to be a backup guard, you know, say goodbye. And I say that because Shaq Harrison has been damn good as well over the last couple of weeks. He's showing that in a similar role, he's not going to replace everything that Chris Dunn does, but if he can replace 60, 70, 80% of what Chris Dunn can do at a lot cheaper value, and you can use the delta between Chris Dunn's contract and Shaq Harrison's contract to bring in some other player, some bench depth, then I think I'm for that. So it's all going to come down to price with Chris Dunn, but it's going to be an interesting point for him during this offseason because there's not many teams that have cap space to outright sign Chris Dunn, but there's going to be a lot of teams that have their full mid-level exception, which is around that $8 to $9 million range, which I think is probably too expensive for me with Chris Dunn, but I know a lot of fans probably disagree with me on that one, but it's going to be interesting to see what the Clippers do. They're getting a taste of formable Joakim Noah now, but maybe Chris Dunn will be another formable with the Clippers.
I just want to say really quick, I hope the Clippers win it all. Yep. Just because Kawhi's my favorite player in the NBA today. But most more importantly, Joakim Noah, one of the classiest Bulls I've ever met in my life. Got to spend some time with him. We shared a hug after 2009, shortly after Ben Gordon left. He could tell I was distraught. And we talked about how upset I was. And I also said, when you stole the ball from Paul Pierce and dunked it, it's one of the best moments I've ever had as a Bulls fan. He reached out, gave me a handshake, and then brought me in. We gave a big hug. It was one of the best moments I've ever had. So, and then did I ever tell you that story?
Yeah, you did. You told that story on the podcast.
Okay, I should tell it again some other time. But then, it sounds good, man. But I hope he wins it. Wouldn't that be great?
It would be beautiful to see, particularly if they go through LeBron and take him out in the Western Conference Finals. It would be glorious for us Bulls fans. It would be the biggest win the Bulls have had in quite some time to see Joakim Noah, despite being on the Clippers, taking out LeBron. That would be sweet. But let's hope they do it. Let's hope Noah stays around in that 10-day contract and be guaranteed into a season-long deal. And hopefully he's raising that Larry O.B. at the end of June. That would be nice. But Fred, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, as always, sharing your thoughts. Obviously, fans, if you haven't tuned in to the show of the recent weeks, Fred is now part of Bulls HQ full-time. He is my co-host going forward. So, Fred, I'm excited about that going forward because we can get into these spirited debates. Often I am proving you wrong quite often. And just like I did with our season-long bet, bringing this all the way back around, I was going to say I'm sad to see you lose, but that's definitely not true. But Fred, I appreciate you joining me on this episode of the show. Tell the people where they can follow you online.
You can follow me at CBE Fred or C Red Fred. Just search for me there. I will be banned from Twitter for a month. So I'm going to start publicizing my Instagram. I just got to get that going. I got to figure that thing out. It should take, by the time I figure it out, I'll probably be back. My ban will be over. But I'll be gone 30 days. Yeah, when am I going to wear the Heinrich jersey again?
Well, you have to do it by June 2020. So I've put a hard date on it. So it has to be done before June 2020, before we enter the new season. And you also have to record a YouTube video that lasts 1 minute in length where you profess your love for Kirk Heinrich to basically reading a script that I will be providing at a later date. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And I want to make sure that your ban from Twitter isn't at the time that we release that, just so you can feel the full force of the emotion and all the negativity that hopefully comes your way during that month.
Sounds great. Thanks, brother. Yeah, I got to tell you, this has been fun doing Bulls HQ with you. I hope it's been received by the audience well. For the 10% of your Dog Bowl Nation that find me endearing.
Yeah, I think it's probably closer to 5%. But I've enjoyed it, and that's all that matters. But whilst you're following Fred on Twitter, do so with me too at MK Hoops. Follow the show on Twitter as well at Bulls HQ Pod. Send us an email, bullshqpod@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, which Fred finally joined on the weekend, you can too. Send us an email and we'll send you a link to the Discord channel. But that just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for tuning in, Bulls fans. We'll be back next week.